Will you pray with me? O God, may the words of my mouth and the meditations of all of our hearts be pleasing in your sight. O Lord, our rock and our redeemer. Amen. Just about a year ago today, we were not worshiping in this sanctuary. Many of us were still without power, or not even in the state of Florida because of Hurricane Irma. And so we probably understand a little bit about what's going on in North Carolina. We understand all too well. We understand life with no power in the middle of the summer. Now, South Florida is very different than North Carolina without any power, but it's still hot and annoying. We understand what it is to hear the stories of people who can't get to their homes because of water. And in a week or so, we will understand when people tell us they can't go home because they have no home to go to. We know this because this is life in Florida with hurricanes. Many of you probably have friends who don't have a home here in Florida anymore, or couldn't afford to come back and repair. Many of you have names in your hearts and on your minds of people who've been gone for a year and won't be coming back. We know this heartache. We know this despair. We know the pain and suffering that comes from living on our planet. Now, in Florida, we understand, pretty much anywhere along the eastern coast, we understand that hurricanes can come. Right? We understand that life is fragile and the earth is going to do what the earth is going to do. If you live in Florida, you have to expect hurricanes. If you live in California, you have to expect earthquakes. If you live in Oklahoma, you have to have a tornado shelter. If you live up north, you need a snowplow and chains and four-wheel drive and sandbags or kitty litter. And what?
A big heater.
Everywhere on earth has its complications, doesn't it? And oftentimes we experience these complications and it is tragic. The story of Ruth begins with one of those natural disasters in the nation of Israel. It's a natural disaster that happened all too often in Israel, and it is famine. It didn't rain enough that year, and the crops didn't grow. It begins with that setting. And we know that setting because we know the despair that comes with it. We know the pain and the hopelessness and the sorrow. And Elkanah and his wife Naomi look at their two young sons, and there's no food for them. And they decide to leave behind the ancestral lands that belong to Elkanah and his family, and they go to a land where they can grow something. And so they go east. They go to the River Jordan, and they can't stop there. Other people have all of that land. And so they cross the River Jordan into the land of Moab, the land of Israel's enemies. People who have been at war with Israel for generations. But there is good soil there, and there has been rain, and they're able to grow crops. And there they stay. They put down roots, literally and figuratively. And they begin to raise crops and a house. And after the blood, sweat, and tears are done, Elkanah doesn't wake up one day. And Naomi is left with her two young sons. They've been there about 10 years. And what does she do? She says, I need to find wives for these boys. Because the line needs to continue. They need to have families. And so she finds wives from among the Moabites, from among Israel's enemies, the people they weren't supposed to ever marry. And they get married. And for a short time, Naomi is probably happy. Her boys are married and they're happy. But then both of the boys die, and it's just Naomi and her two daughters-in-law. This story is filled with tragedy, isn't it? It starts with famine and desolation, and then there's no children, only death. And all of Naomi's stories at this point. All she can see is the darkness, all she can see is the despair. And so she turns to her two young daughters-in-law, who at their youngest were 13, at their eldest might have been 20. And says, "Go back to your father's houses. I have nothing for you. I am destitute. I have no house for you to be a part of. I'm going to go back to my land and hope that I can live off the kindness of strangers. But you have a chance to get married. Go home and let your fathers find you new husbands." And that's what Doug read for us a little earlier. Orpah, one of the wives, first daughter-in-law, and then she decides to go back to her father's household. But not Ruth. Ruth has decided something somewhere along the line, that she is never going to leave Naomi. And it might be because Ruth understands what happens to widows in the ancient Near East. They wither and they die because no one is going to care for them. Because they belong to their husband, and if their husband is gone, they're supposed to go to their sons. And if their sons are gone, there's nobody. And so she decides, "I'm going to take care of my mother-in-law." And some of you may have had that similar experience. You've taken care of aged parents. You've nurtured them. You've cared for them. You've watched them grow older and more feeble. And some of you have had to walk through the darkness of burying that parent. And so you can understand the devotion that Ruth has for Naomi. And so Ruth and Naomi go back across the Jordan, and they go to the area that is probably pretty well known to you, at least by name, Bethlehem. But it's not called Bethlehem at that point. Some other things happen in that part of the world. We'll remember them in a couple months. But this story is about Ruth and Naomi. And I need to stop the story for a few minutes because I need you to get some context for what's going to happen next in the story. Some very important things are going to happen, and this is what Ruth is counting on the entire time she's going back to Israel. There are two laws that you need to know from the book of Leviticus. And since that is the book most people skip when they read the Bible, I'm just going to tell you what they are. The first one you find in Leviticus chapter 19. And it's a law about gleaning. It's a law about harvesting your crops. And this law would never pass in a capitalist society like ours. But it worked for Israel, and this is why it worked, because God said so. God told the people of Israel never to harvest all of the crops. Harvest just the center of your fields and leave the edges of the fields for the strangers, the foreigners, the widows, and the orphans. Leave the edges of your field for the poor, so that they can always have food to eat. So Naomi knows that there may be some food that she can get if only she works hard enough to get it. If only the people who own the fields are actually living according to the laws set down by Moses. And when they get to Israel, she and Ruth are going to count on that. And the law even goes even further, and it says, any grain that the harvesters drop, don't pick up. Leave it for the poor and the animals. And we'll get to that in a second. The other law, which is very important, comes to us from Leviticus chapter 25. And this is a really crazy one that just might boggle your mind a bit. It's the law of the kinsman redeemer, the Goel in Hebrew. It's the law that says, when you have lost everything, and you have no way to sustain yourself, you may sell yourself to one of your kinsmen. You may sell yourself not as a slave, per se, but more of as an indentured servant. You may sell yourself and all of your land and all of your property to someone who is nearby related to you, so that you may continue to live in the land. And on the Day of Atonement, that person will give you back your land and your freedom. Now, there's a lot of things in there that might sound a little weird to you. But this is a provision for people who come upon hard times, who lose everything in the famine, or the hurricane, or the earthquake, or the tornado, or the blizzard. None of those are going to happen in Israel. The famine is happening there. This law was put into place so that there would be a provision for us to be able to maintain our family trees, to maintain our ancestral lands, to be the people of God in the promised land. And so, these two laws together give us some context for the book of Ruth. Because what happens next is Ruth and Naomi go back to Israel. And the next scene has Ruth gleaning in the fields behind some workers. She's picking up the one or two grains that they've dropped. And then she goes back to her mother-in-law, Naomi, and says, "Look at the food that I've gathered, and I imagine it's about this much. This is what we have to eat today. I'll go back tomorrow." And Naomi asks, "Where did you go and get that food?" And she tells her, and she goes, "You're in luck. This is Boaz's field. He's one of our kinsmen redeemers." Hear that? He's one of the people who is able to restore us if he's willing to do that. He is someone who's able to redeem us so that we can one day be what we once were, that we may be made whole. And so she tells Ruth to go back and harvest and glean in those fields. And the next time she goes back, she encounters Boaz. And she says, "This is the Moabite woman that Naomi brought back with her." Naomi has nobody. And he tells his harvesters to do something that I don't imagine any business owner would ever tell them to do. Drop some on purpose. In fact, pull them out every now and again so that she has some food that she can take home to Naomi. And God provides more for Ruth and Naomi in their poverty through Boaz. And then time passes a little bit more, and Naomi says, "You know what? Boaz is being so kind to you." Now, the word isn't in here, but the connotation is, go and seduce him. You're young and beautiful. Go seduce him. But what she tells Naomi, Ruth, to do is she says, "You know what? They're going to be heavy in the drink. They've had a long, hard day of harvesting. They're going to be threshing for a long time. They're going to be having a good time. Sneak in there at night and lay down next to him." And when in the morning comes and Boaz awakens and he sees Ruth laying at his feet. Foot is a euphemism, everybody. She says, "Spread your garment over me." Not because of any indiscretion, but as a way of saying, "Bring me into your tent. Will you redeem my mother-in-law and provide for us as you already are? Make us a part of your household so that we can continue to live and one day be made whole again." Boaz agrees, gives her a whole bunch of grain and sends her on her way. And then he has the business transaction at the end of Ruth with someone who might have a better claim on the land. Boaz, the kinsman redeemer, sees Naomi in her poverty, redeems her, and then at the end, what Doug read second, is restoring her. Restoring the family of Elkanah. Restoring the limb of the family tree that was broken. And it brings us full circle in this story that at the beginning we started with famine, right? No life, death only. And at the end, the birth of a child which brings hope to everyone. And Naomi declares the famine at an end. This is the story of God's redemption of this family, of these people who had lost everything, had no hope for a future, and yet God provided in Leviticus, of all places, means through which they could be restored. There's a parallel to this story, and it's often a story you've heard if you've been in church for very long. It's a story about some other people who had lost everything. And some near relation of theirs came and dwelt among us and redeemed us and is restoring us. It's the story of Jesus, everybody. The story of Ruth takes place in the fields around Bethlehem, and something else happens around the fields near Bethlehem. And another kinsman redeemer is born, not just for you or I or several of the Jewish people, but for all of the people of all creation. Brothers and sisters, when we read the Old Testament, we can see the mercy and the love of God, which is made real and manifest to us in Jesus in the New Testament. The God of the Old Testament is just as loving and merciful as the God of the New Testament. Don't ever let anyone tell you otherwise, because we have the story of Ruth, of people who had nothing, who were restored because of God's loving mercy, made real by a kinsman redeemer. This is our story, isn't it? Our story, the people of God, this is ours. And we are often more like Naomi than we're willing to admit. We're the insider in the story. We're the Jew. We're the person who knows, supposed to know what's going on. But we often forget that and need to be redeemed. We need to be restored. We need someone from outside to come alongside us, to love us, to speak truth to us, to guide us and walk with us through the darkest of times, and help us to find our kinsman redeemer again. This morning, I hope that you will cry out to God, not only for your redemption, your restoration, but for those who are experiencing loss and torment, so that they would have someone come and restore them. And that may be us. It may be you. But it'll definitely be God. Amen. I invite you to stand as you are able. Turn to your hymnal, number 883, as we affirm.